Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, good answer. Well, folks, this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association's Technical Net. It's held weekly on 146955, the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club in Alpine, New Jersey. All stations are welcome to participate. It's a little different than most nets, so hopefully you will. First things first, the purpose of this net is to have a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, things that depend on those things, things that are related to those things, the natural phenomena that supports it, the underlying science, and maybe even the math. What do we do just to have fun with it? What do we do to serve others? Anything else in between? So, if you have any inkling of an idea, feel free to bring it out. The other thing is we'd like you to check in even if you don't have a topic for the net, because we kind of like to know who's there, so we can kind of tailor the net to the audience. It works better that way. If I start talking in terms of fast Fourier transforms and everybody's education is sitting there at high school algebra, then we're in trouble. So, I don't want to do that. So with that, no further ado, let me just add one other thing. And that other thing is that you check in with a question, a comment, something for sale or swap, any and all of those things, or none of the above. That's how you do it. So your name, your call sign, and again, questions, comments, for sale or swap, and none of the above. Those are the categories. You can use any and all as you see fit. So with no further ado, start with November's. Stations with a November call, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR? This is N2OEL. One question with three parts.
Okay, so it's like the Trinity. It's like three persons and one God. Got it. All right, very good, Noel. Welcome aboard. Anybody else with a November call? All righty. Any other Novembers? One more time. All right, let's go to Whiskey's.
J-E-K, Don, with a comment.
Don, thanks for mathematics.
Okay, it's Don, W2JEK, with a comment. Good evening, Donald. And somebody made a comment about mathematics, but your signal's really, really weak. Try it again.
Gordon, this is W2PDQ. Just probably a question about PSK31. And I've just been joking about sensor mathematics.
At this point in the day, don't try to test my mathematics too thoroughly. Very good, W2PDQ, got that. And any other whiskeys? All right, let's go to Kilo 2s.
K2BAR, this is K2ZO. No comments or questions at this time.
Good evening, James. Okay, any other Kilo 2s? All right, any other kilos?
K2AMI, Tony. No questions, just a comment, perhaps you make a comment about our up-and-coming affordable day. Back to net.
Capital idea, Tony. Any other kilos?
K2ZC, Dave, no questions, no comments.
Dave, thank you very much. Any other kilos?
KC2UNH, Paul, are in the park, none of the above.
Evening, Paul. Any other kilos?
KC2DK, Gary, no comment.
Evening, Gary. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos? Okay, how about alphas? Okay. then let's go to our next pool. Is anybody on Echolink?
Nobody on Echolink because it's not up.
Oh, okay. I'll have to make sure that that gets corrected. Very good. Any other call signs anywhere else?
We'll see if we'll go there tomorrow and work on it. And
this is Rick. No questions, no comments yet.
Thank you, Rick. Gotcha, Noel. Thank you very much. WCLCN's in there. Who else? One more time. Anybody else? Any call sign? Okay. Very good. Ah, dear me. Let's get on with the messages here. This is all good. W2JEK, Don, you first. K2BAR.
K2BAR and Annette, W2JEK, good evening, everybody. Just reminding everybody that our next VE test session will be on May 25th. That's a Saturday morning. That's at the Ham Fest up in the township of Washington. The testing will start at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, if anybody has any questions, yes, now, or get in touch with me some other time. Back to you, Gordon, W2JEK.
Okay, Don, very good. Anybody have any questions for Don about the upcoming test session or testing in general? Alrighty. Just to be advised, if anyone's looking to upgrade to general, there is a two-day general course this Saturday and Sunday at the Red Cross in Fairfield, right off of Route 46, and it's free, and if you want information, I can send it to you. Just shoot me an email at w2tango@arl.net or att.net, and I'll make sure that you get that info. They're always willing to have more participants. And anybody else have any comments or questions about licensing or upgrading? Okie doke. Well, let's get to Tony with his comment. Thank you, Don. K2AMI, K2BAR.
Good evening, all. It's K2AMI. I'm sure many of you are familiar with or were aware of the fact that on May 11th, Barra will be having what they call Affordable Day. It'll be up in Wooddale Park in Westwood, just off of Old Hook Road. Up above where the, if you go up Old Hook Road past the Pascack Valley Hospital, to a traffic light, make a left turn, and towards Wooddale Park, you'll find it there. It starts about 10 in the morning, and runs till we get tired, probably 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And any of the anybody who's interested can bring what they consider of their own portable station and settle up in the trees or in the fields or wherever they want to settle up, and just demonstrate how they will operate a portable station in the event of an emergency or in the event of a game they're playing. Hi. So that's May 11th coming up. It's a lot of fun. If the weather's good, you can be amazed at how well limited antennas will work. You don't need big towers and beams. Wires will do fine. Vertical antennas will work. And it's always has been a lot of fun, a lot of a good learning experience. We also find why they don't work sometimes. Hi. And, of course, Jim may want to mention that we are having something called a Ham Fest on May 25th. That's the Memorial Day weekend. That's Saturday in the Memorial Day weekend. I'll leave that open for Jim to speak further about that. So back to Ned.
Why don't you take that?
This is K2ZO. Do I have it?
Yep.
Okay. K2ZO again. Alrighty. Tony, the name of that park is Pascack Brook Park. Wooddale Park is where we have the picnic, and that's in Hillsdale. But the Pascack Brook Park, and of course it's off of Emerson Road, which is right down the hill from Old Hook Road, near where the hospital is, just north. So it's pretty easy to get to. And, of course, we do have the HamFest coming up, May 25th. If you're a VARA member or even want to volunteer, anybody, please let me know. And we'll be very happy to have you. We need people early in the morning to direct cars and kind of give out goodies, tickets and stuff like that, collect the money. So if you have the time and want to come help us, we'd be more than happy to have you. And that's about it for now. This is K2ZO.
Okay, any questions for either Tony or Jim? One other key important item is that Sunday is the VARA meeting, and we'll be meeting, we'll be meeting at the Washington Township Municipal Building, gathering around 7 o'clock, and then we'll bag it and start the meeting about 7:30, and you'll have a good time. I won't be able to make the meeting as I'll be traveling for business, so I apologize, but that's what happens. In any case, I think it'll be a fun meeting, and I know Bruce is looking for volunteers from HamFest. So, with that in mind, anybody have any questions about any of these topics? Alrighty. No, I guess that's good. Thank you. Any of you have any follow-ons you wanted to add? And very good. Well, we got a couple of questions here in the pot, and I'm really glad for it. N2OEL, your triune question, please, K2BAR.
One of the early things I learned as an item of faith in amateur radio is there is no such thing as a monopole antenna. If anybody tries to sell you a monopole antenna, you're either a liar or a fool. Well, that said antenna that I just bought and I sent you the link appears to be a monopole antenna as opposed to the PAR infrared antennas, which looks to be a center-phase half-wave dipole, which is simple expedient of using the outer shield of the coax as one half of the antenna and stopping it with some ferrite chokes. So my question goes like this. The antenna that I just ordered, which is supposed to be 40 through 6 meters, it looks to be like a 901 bound. Question on the theory of how that works will be my question. And the other thing is, if you take and make an N-fed half-wave dipole by feeding, say 20 meters, so you use 5 meters of coax with the ferrite beads, and then run another 5 meters of wire from the other, from the center conductor out, I think you would have a half-wave antenna. Am I correct? Is that how it works? And how well do they work? And do they need matching? So, back to next. This is Antonio.
Okay. Let's try one question at a time. And I'm going to ask you to repeat those other questions later on, because you have me kind of befuddled a little bit. So, how an N-fed antenna. Well, the N-fed antennas you're looking at are half-wave antennas fed on the end. And as such, they have a very high impedance. And as such, they have a really creatively built balun, a 9-to-1 balun, to bring the impedance down to something that, you know, what I'll call conventional tuners can even think about matching. So that's how they do that. Now, if you don't have a perfect half wave, say you pick a length of wire that's kind of nominally acceptable, albeit but a high impedance because of you're feeding it on the end, then that's fine too. But again, the 9-to-1 balun will allow your internal tuner or the matching network of your output, of the output of your amplifier or your radio to meet that. Now, one other thing. It's really not a quarter wave monopole. It's really something related to a half wave that you're actually putting out there. Might be a short half wave, might be a long half wave, might be multiple half waves, might be an odd multiple of quarter waves, therefore fed at a really odd point. But the bottom line is that 9-to-1 balun plus either the tolerance of your transmitter or the matching network of your transmitter will handle that. Anybody else want to take a whack at that?
This is K20.
Outstanding.
Okay. Well, I think what Noel is referring to is a type of antenna now that seems to be slightly different than the standard half-wave fed ZEP that we all know and love. If you take a half-wave antenna and you feed it at the end, you have a very high impedance. Very high. However, if you feed it with open wire line, with just the open wire and the other side unterminated, what happens is that you can select the length of it that will automatically transform the impedance. So if you take a quarter wave length of line and a half wave of antenna at that frequency you want to operate, the impedance at the base of that open wire line will be low. It will come down to a reasonable amount that you can just put a coil of coax or a 1-to-1 balun and go into a tuner. It really ends up being kind of a one-band antenna, although with a little bit of fooling around with the feed line, you can make it work on a number of other bands. That's one type of N-band antenna. Let me drop it. Okay, there's another breed of N-fed antenna that is being used or touted or whatever. And basically what it does, it's a half-wave length of wire. It's fed with a 9-to-1 balun, okay? And it's fed a little bit further in. It's not quite a Windom 30% in or what. It's just fed in a little bit. For instance, basically like a tenth of a wavelength in. So you might have where the balun goes, the quarter wavelength of the line, and on the other side of the balun, just a short 3 or 4 foot piece of wire. However, when you move in just a small amount off the end, you start to drop that impedance quite a bit. So now you've got something that's a little bit more manageable. And by choosing the length and using a tuner, you can get yourself a reasonable impedance that the radio will match. You gotta have RF on the feed line, and you're going to need a choke down at the bottom just to kind of clean it up. But it does work.
Okay, that's helpful as well, Jim. Any more you have, Noel?
Okay. The theory that I read was that the trade capacitance is what completes the circuit there. The other thing is, it warns us that we must not put a bound at the feed point. So that implies to me that perhaps the coax going to the rig is used as the other part of the circuit, so to speak. The other antenna I was talking about is the power end-fed, which I think are center-fed dipoles, just that they're using part of the coax as half of the dipole. That's what you think.
No, I don't think that. I mean, you're not using the coax as part of the dipole at all.
You could, I suppose, you know, make, or what do they call that thing? That's not a bazooka. Maybe it is. Where you fold another layer outside on the coax, essentially make a center-fed vertical dipole. Run the feed line up through a piece of tubing, tag the tubing, top edge of the tubing to the shield, and then extend the wire somewhere else. That would certainly do the trick, but that's not what you were describing.
Well, as you know, it would be very attractive if you're operating from an apartment building and perhaps you can get something out of your window to a tree or something, and if you're in the distance, feed it right from your apartment. I noticed that the length that's given in that antenna was 30 feet, which is suspiciously close to the 31 feet that the L9 antennas or whatever. There's a lot of antennas that are either 31 feet or 43 feet. And you know why they picked those particular frequencies of length to use as a multi-band antenna?
Yep. You know, the old 43-foot piece of a vertical whatever, it's one of those magic links that with little fanfare will resonate on many an amateur pad, and that's why they use it. That was kind of in a vertical mode what Jim was describing, but don't confuse that with monopole either, because it really does want to see radials. Okay. Anybody else have anything you want to add to that?
2JEK.
Mr. Don.
The other thing you got to consider is the radiation pattern. I think there's 43. It's good for 20 meters, 80, 30, something, 80, 160. But you get up on, let's say, 10 meters or 15 meters, now your main lobe is going to put... come up at a high angle, not a low angle like you need for DX. If you have a minor lobe of 15 meters, maybe not the lobe you want. The heavy, the big lobe is going up at about a 45 degree angle, not 30 degrees or less with a you want for a DX antenna. One thing you got to consider with all these antennas is how they're configured. If you had them as a horizontal, that would be one thing, but to use them as a vertical, you're going to have to realize that if it gets beyond the 5/8 wave, then it's going to be have a high angle radiation. Back to that, W2JK.
That's a good point. We've been focusing on getting a match, and we haven't talked about where the RF goes. I kind of got the thought that Noel was more concerned about getting the RF launch anywhere from a challenging domicile, such as an apartment or a condo or something. So that's good that we got that out there, too, that you really do have to look at the orientation of the wire or the pipe or whatever you're using, and also its length with respect to the operating frequency, and really make some decent decisions. And, you know, EasyNeck is a really good tool for trying that out. That's another thing to consider. Alrighty. Anybody else have comments on this?
Noel and Gordon, I just sent you what I was just talking about as far as an unfed antenna. And Noel, it does show how there's some capacitive coupling to complete the antenna there. So take a look at the file I just sent you.
WA2UMP.
UMP, go. And your name?
Yeah, this is Jim. Wasn't sure what time the TechNet began, but did email a question in earlier.
Sorry, Jim, I haven't had a chance to read my email, so we'll get to your question in a minute. You have a question, that'll be good. So we'll handle that after PDQ's question. Alrighty. Thank you, Jim, and we'll take a look at that. If anyone would like the same email that Jim sent in the well with me, just let us know, and we'll be happy to forward it to you. Alrighty. Got a lot of stuff going on my desk here. email desk. I'm looking at my work email. Didn't want to do that. It's the wrong computer. All right, there we go. Alrighty. With that in mind, nothing else on that topic?
Okay, but I'm thinking is a lot of these campsites that we've frequented in the past basically are, you know, 30 feet wide, 40 feet wide, and the length of a vehicle. So you basically have to shoot your antenna up in the trees, like above your head, so you don't trespass into somebody next door who will be a little bit angry. Which that's one of the reasons I'm looking at a multi-band headset, et cetera. And sometimes you may not wish to use your motorhome as the other half of an antenna. That's just enjoyable.
I can understand that. I can very easily understand that. Alrighty. Well, that's a good idea. Anybody have anything else they want to add to this topic? Alrighty, Noel, any more to your questions? You bring up a good point, and that's, you know, about contained spaces or confined spaces in general, that's certainly worth paying attention to. And on Sunday night, when I set up my little portable operation down in Virginia, southern part of Virginia, I will be constrained to the higher bands because I can't put any RF out because I'm going to be doing a frequency scan. I don't want to throw any hash onto the spectrum. So, it is what it is. Alrighty, let's move this along. W2PDQ, Rich. How are you, Richard? Over to you, K2BAR.
K2BAR, W2PDQ. Gordon, I guess the first thing is to ask you how you're doing with the mesh network. And maybe a little bit of advice. I guess you work with FL Digi. And any advice on filtering for that band, that mode?
Okay. So, Rich, thank you again for that device. And we flashed it, I think, a week or so ago. And now it's going to become part of the complex at the Fairlawn Club and or over at various points along Garrett Mountain and or over by William Patterson. That's the plan. So with that in mind, we're making some progress. Tomorrow night, actually, at the Fairlawn Radio Club, we're going to be working on video streaming. But hardly full motion. We're going to start with frame a second and see how that works using Carl's camera, and we'll go from there. So we'll see how that works. And yeah, he's already got it working between his camera and his PC over the Ethernet, so we're just going to insert the mesh in between. We just have to take care of some addressing issues. So that should be pretty exciting. And let's stop there, and I'll come back to FL Digi in a minute. Anybody else have any things they'd like to add about mesh networking, video cameras, you know, IP-enabled cameras, things like that? Alrighty. Well, that was helpful. Let's see. Rich, did you want to make any comments about that before we move on to the other question?
No, Gordon, I'm just curious because I've been playing around with AirLink, Express and FLCC and some other thing, and I was wondering if I could go and buy the relatively expensive CW filter for it.
CW filter for what?
For HF, like 10 meters and 20 meters to receive frequency shifting.
For what radio is this?
This is a new radio for me. It's a Kenwood TS-480 with a Digimaster modem.
Okay, so if we're talking about a filter for a TS-480, I mean, you have audio DSP. Ugh, audio DSP. So I'm going to throw this one to, again, Jim, because he has a pair of 480s, and his thoughts as to whether you should get one or the other crystal filters is a question I think he could more competently answer. Jim?
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Well, I'm not sure what you want to do or what, but I can tell you what I have in my radio. I have equipped the TS-480 with the message unit so that I can store messages and at a push of a button bring them back. I made a little box to do that. And I also have two filters in it. I've got the 1.8 filter, which is really nice. And I've also got the 500 hertz filter. And the reason I chose the 500 hertz filter is that the 250 is a little too narrow for operating in a contest like Field Day, where people don't always zero beat you. But the radio works good. You have to remember that the DSP in that thing is in the audio, so that if you have strong signals adjacent to your what you're listening to, it can pump your AGC, so you don't do well. That's why I chose the 1.8 for crowded phone bands, and of course the 500 for CW. And those are two good choices for whatever you're doing. And even if you're going to run RITI or other digital modes, the 500 hertz filter will work out pretty good. Connect.
Thank you, sir. That really answers my question. That's just exactly what I want to know. Is W2PDQ back to net?
Yeah, is there another station you wanted to get in there? Okay. Well, all right, yeah, and one other thing, I think that radio has one other feature which you can use to help a little bit with that AGC issue, and that is... there's an IF shift, if I recall, and that IF shift can be used to narrow down that IF and therefore keep your AGC from pumping as well. Jim, have you used that for that purpose?
Yes, and it works quite well. Also, the noise blankers in there work well. And as I say, if you're going to use that radio for digital modes, invest in the TCXO, which really keeps the frequency very, very stable. As I said, since the DSP is in the audio section, you definitely want to put some filters into that radio for you know, crowded bands. But you do that, and that's a first-class radio, and it can stand up against some of the fancier radios. I mean, I have a much more expensive ICOM here, and this radio hears everything that ICOM hears. Back to that.
Which ICOM do you have, Jim?
I have a 7600.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Which do you find to be quieter as a receiver?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, if you have a full DSP radio, they don't like pulses. So one of the things that you notice right away, if you don't have the noise blanker on, is there's a pulse, like just a electrical noise or a switch opening up or something like that. You'll hear that pop in the receiver. That's the DSP, all full DSP, like the 7600, and you won't hear it in a conventional type receiver, which is kind of interesting. And of course, the cure for that is to run the noise blanker all the time in the 7600, which is what they recommend, but just don't set it at a high level, because it doesn't distort like some of the other radios do with the noise blanker. But it's an interesting phenomena, and it happens because the DSP has to kind of grab and process that signal. So you get a high rise time spike in the front end of one of these things. It's much more noticeable on a DSP radio than it is in, say, a conventional type.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So the analog IF is a little more tolerant to that kind of nonsense. Very good. Let's see. What else? You said they both hear the same, but you didn't answer my question as to which one's quieter. You know, noise pulses notwithstanding.
They're both about as quiet. The noisiest radio is the TS-850. That has a very noisy receiver. I don't know if you've ever noticed one of those, but you can you know, clean it up if you want to do some work on it. But that has a very noise. It's fatiguing to listen to that radio. It's got a very loud, not loud, but it's kind of interesting. It's hard to describe until you listen to it. But I would say that the 7600 is indeed quieter once you set up all of the parameters you want on it. But as far as beat it up, drag it out to field day, run 200 watts, the 200 watt 480HX can't be beat.
Yeah, I would think not. It sounds pretty cool. Well, anybody else have anything they want to inquire about these different receiver systems?
I just wanted to make a comment on something I'm going to be working on here. A number of people that I've talked to have been using this Plantronics GameCom. It's the Plantronics GameCom 337. And the interesting thing is the gaming headset, but it works quite well on amateur radios. I've heard guys on the air with it. It sounds good. You do have to do some work on it to get some bias voltage for the electret microphone. But the interesting thing is that this is called an open-ear headset. And the headset is open so that you can hear from the outside. And, of course, by doing that, it makes it a lot cooler. My other headphones, if I wear them in the hot weather, my God, I sweat like crazy. So I've been looking for something that has some air that move out in it. So this thing is designed so that you can hear, because it's a gaming headset, you won't be able to hear your audio on your computer. But yet, it still has the the audio coming out of the speaker into your ear. So anyway, my plan is, as I said, I've heard people on the air with these things, my plan is to convert this one and build a little box for it that will provide the bias for the electret mic. And also, I will have to build some gain into that to drive the ICOM, I know that. So that's my project, is to build a little adapter box for this thing so you can use it with an ICOM or a Kenwood. So we'll be reporting on that soon. Back to Ned.
Outstanding, outstanding. I want to go back to Richard. I realize I didn't answer the second part of his question, but finish this up first. Very good. Anybody have any questions for Jim? Okay, very good. Thank you, Jim. That sounds like an exciting thing, a Plantronics GameCom. And the biggest problem, as you said, is adding a little gain for ICOM and little bias for the electric microphone cartridge. Good to keep that in mind. Alrighty. Richard, you asked about PSK, or should we say FL Digi, and I never answered that question. Are you still there?
Yes, Gordon, this is W2PDQ. I'm still here, and that was my question, really, is filtering for this FSK mode. Because I'm wondering, I've been listening in and not listening in for a brief moment, and I'm getting to see a lot of incoming traffic on 10 meters or 20 meters. And I see the capital letters coming across, but I don't see the lowercase. Long way around.
I didn't get the back half of what you said. You got noisier as you transmitted. But, okay, so you're really just worried about the filtering, and that's fine. One thing I will say is FLDigi, FLMessage are a cool little package to put together and use, so I think it's well worth consideration, and you know, a bunch of us are using it on 440. Right now, my station's not up, but next week or two, I'll get that squared away. I've got plenty of radios for that purpose, so I'm just going to dedicate one with a modest indoor antenna to the 440 frequency we're all using, which is 443-100, I think. So, anyway. So, does that answer your basic question?
Yes, Gordon, I think Jim answered most of my questions, although I'm still reluctant to go take a siren arm to put a new filter in a brand new radio. But I'm still playing around with this PSK. I put in the FLDigi on Windows and on Ubuntu. And then I put in something which is like a update of DigiPan, which is something Digi. Airline Express. Back to next.
Airline Express. Okay, I've not used that, but okay. Is that a shareware or a triware or a? A very pricey package.
Gordon, it's a piece of freeware, and it looks like somebody improved on DigiPan and made it a little bit easier to use, and it seems to work pretty good, but not as well as FLDigi. Oh, back to you.
Okay, that's good to know. I'm an FLDigiPan. What's the name of the program again?
Gordon, the name is, Airline Express, and I just found it by accident, going and stumbling around on the internet, and there's a million kind of, airlines, you know, that have similar names, but, I downloaded it and installed it in a moment and put it in the COM ports, and, it keys up the transmitter, so I go, oh my goodness, this is fast. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Airline Express. Well, it probably take me a lot to move off the dime and leave FLDigi behind, but the combination of FLDigi, FLMessage, and some of the other package elements are well worth pursuing, and you compare the two, it maybe this one works for you guys. So do consider it. Anybody have any comments on this or similar packages? All right, well, thank you, Richard. God bless. Let's see. I think we have another question. Before we take the next question, let me just see if there are any other check-ins. Anybody else wanting to join the net tonight, please call K2BAR.
This is KD2CRB, Sue, with a question. Sorry I'm late, Gordon. Give me a chance to put me on the list. Back to
next. Excellent. Thank you, Sue. Anybody else? One more time. Is there anybody else?
WA2UMP. I kind of came in at the wrong moment before.
But Jim, I got you. You're next. You're actually going to make the next question. I just wanted to see if there's anybody else. Righty, very Very good. Well, Jim, it's all yours. WA2UMT, W2TTT, K2BR.
Yeah, good evening. A question I had, yesterday was my birthday, got a new antenna. It's the Elk Log Periodic, works on 2 meters and 440. I'm using it as an indoor antenna, works quite well. I bought it because it has a very small footprint. It has the boom is only 2 foot long. Works pretty well on both bands. So I have a two-part question. First part, I was on the net yesterday, and Jim, K2ZO, I believe your call is, I mentioned that he had some information about it, had some experience with this antenna. A little surprised because it is kind of an esoteric antenna, but I'd be very interested in hearing what advice and insight he had with respect to it. The other question I have is a little more nebulous. With every antenna that works on two bands, there's some compromises made, certainly mono banners work best, and also when it's smaller there's compromises made, and the compromises made with this design is that on 440 it works on the third harmonic, and the issue with that is that rather than having the a cleaner pattern like you might have in a Yagi, it has three lobes. Now the center lobe is much stronger than the two that sit off to the sides. If I turn around, if I listen carefully, I can't quite hear evidence of it, the owner of the company at Elk did tell me that this issue did exist. It's a trade-off with the design. So I'm interested in if any log periodic gurus there, what they think of this compromise. Acceptable compromise or not acceptable? And with that, I'll turn it back to Ned.
Well, let's look about this. This is a relatively compact antenna. Gives you two bands, gives you a modest amount of directivity, albeit with some funky lobes on 440. Log periodics are meant to be frequency agile, not meant to be, rock crushers, So you get what the design promises to deliver, and that's that. So good for you. Anybody else have any comments?
This is K2ZO.
Jim, go right ahead.
Jim, I was commenting the other night on a net about a different antenna. Somehow I think he got me confused with that other antenna. No, I'm unfamiliar with that antenna. But what I was commenting on was an HF antenna that I have that works on my off-center fed antenna that I optimized for 40 and 80. And it covers the whole complete band on 40 and 80 without the use of a tuner. When I go to the higher frequencies, I need a tuner. But just by cutting and pruning, I can cover the whole 80-meter band with the SWR, never going above on either end, on the high end and the low end. It doesn't get above 1.7. And same thing on 40 meters. And that's what I was commenting on. That was a two-band antenna. So, yes, there are antennas that you can operate on multiple frequencies that are wavelength-related, and they do work. But I was not commenting on the Elk antenna. Perhaps you got a little confused on that, or I may have misled you there because I'm not familiar with it. Back to that.
Okay, anybody else have any comments for Jim regarding his Elk antenna or log periodics in general?
And sometimes it's a little hard to see which comment is directed at who. I think someone else was talking about antennas at the same time. But thank you for your input. Okay, and Gordon, I'm inclined to agree with you. The antenna is relatively small. It's compact. The wave pattern, the pattern is not perfect. It does have a couple of funky lobes on 440. But wanted to add that it does work quite well. It does extend my range. I have indoor antennas only, and it does extend my range into the fringe area. For example, with 5 watts, I can reach repeaters that are 30. There's even one that's 46 miles away. Did make a contact on Simplex with it that was 20 miles away, which was interesting. So it does extend my range into the fringe area. So all in all, I'm very pleased with it, and the design compromises in my book are very acceptable. So thank you for your input.
Okay, very good. Anybody else have any more comments on this log periodic antenna? All right, Jim, well, glad to help. I've only used a few LPs in my time, and frankly, I've just become more of a Yagi quaggy kind of guy, delta loop, whatever. But that's just me. Alrighty. Let's see. I guess our next question comes from Stu, KD2CRB. Stu, how are you this evening, and what's your question?
KD2CRB, KD2BAR. Yeah, sorry, I got on late this evening. Well, wish everybody a nice evening. My question is, I've been doing a little reading, and I understand you could make your mobile rig into what's called a cross-band repeater. So in other words, it could be in a hall, you're having a little trouble transmitting now, so you could then jump to your mobile unit in the parking lot and then have that switch over or something. I wonder if you could more expand on something like that as far as a cross, or what is a cross repeater, back to net.
Okay, so let's address this in some sensible way. A crossband repeater. It's a repeater that has an input and an output on two different bands. Now, you can make it so you always transmit on 2 and, you know, come out on 440, or go in on 440, come out on 2. If you have 220, you could do the same thing with that band, 6 meters, 10 meters, whatever you like. Having said that, you can also make it bidirectional, but it's a little trickier when you do that. The way you set it up is that when you transmit on your handy talky, the receiver is listening on a frequency, and then going out, let's say on 2 meters, so it'll transmit on 2 meters on the input to your favorite repeater, thereby getting you access to that repeater. You do not necessarily have to have it so that within receive, it'll retransmit the repeater back to you on your, let's say, 440 frequency or 430 frequency. You could do it that way, but you don't have to. In fact, the big problem with doing it that way is that unless the repeater drops tone instantaneously, like 7.9 does, like we do here to some degree, but anytime the repeater ID starts kicking up, we drop the tone on the transmitter. 442, that repeater drops tone immediately as well. Any kind of repeater, they either drop tone or drop carrier quickly, could be done bidirectionally. Problem is that repeaters that don't do that end up hanging up your crossband, and you can't break back in before someone else comes in. So there has to be a way to decisively drop for the thing to turn around, because it's half duplex. So let's stop there and see if that much makes sense.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Gordon. I'm going to research this a little bit more. I've been going through the operating manual of the AARL and came across it, and it looked very interesting. I think you cleared it up. Back to net.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad to help there. I know that's tricky business, so And these, a lot of these radios will have a crossband repeat function, and you press a bunch of buttons and it'll do the, it'll enable it, and you press a bunch of buttons again and it'll turn it off. There is some downside to it in that as a crossband repeater, it's not IDing. So if you do decide to leave such a thing in place, you have to occasionally ID it and ask those, if you're repeating the repeater back to you, ask those who are using the repeater to repeat that back, or ID your repeater as well. But that's number one. So the ID issue is one. Some repeater owners get a little crabby about these things. Some get a lot crabby about it. And some self-appointed repeater dictators, you know, get even grumpier about it. So keep that in mind as well. Those are important factors to keep in mind. I would recommend also that you operate them with as low a power level as possible. A, you don't want to cook the radio that you use as a crossband repeater, and B, you don't want to be keying up repeaters four states away.
Okay, yeah, thank you. All right, for that input, and I'll look into it some more back to that.
Very good. Anybody else have any more to add?
What question?
Go ahead, Noel.
That same subject. How about if he just set it up not to repeat the repeater back to him? Because I've noticed in most cases with an HT, you can hear the repeater, you just can't reach it. So really, you only need a half duplex circuit here, which should be from your HT to, for instance, the car. The car repeats it out on the repeater frequency, but you listen to the repeater directly.
Sure, and you can do that very easily. Depending on the radio you have, the handy talk you have, it's fairly easy to do. And what I would do is, I would, if you know the repeater transmits a tone, or not for that matter, just set your receiver on going the other way to require a PL that you're not going to hear on the input coming toward you, and that will save you a lot of grief. That way, it won't actuate when it comes back at you. So that's a good point. Okay, well, I'm not getting who that is, but okay. Anybody else? Well, I'll take that as a no. Well, very good. Any other questions, comments, confusions for the net, or actually, any more you want to add to that, Stu, before we go on to other questions?
No, thank you very much, Gordon. I think I got enough input from there, and I'll go from there. Thank you.
Got a nice eclectic bunch of questions tonight. Alrighty, any other stations to check in? We'll be happy to take your questions with or without a check-in. K2B Air. Well, it's been a little over an hour. I guess we could call it square there. Just a reminder that a week from Saturday is Portable Day, and tomorrow a bunch of us will be down at the Fairlawn Radio Club doing mesh networking with video. So Carl, W2KBF had another hip replacement done, and he's now driving and up and at him again. So he'll be down there with his little IP-enabled camera, so that should be entertaining as well. So best of luck to everybody tonight. Thank you very much for your check-in and your comments and questions and confusions. Haven't heard a for sale or stop item in a while, but that's something to think about it as well. And we'll see you next week. I will be on next week, no problem. So, KGBAR, thanking Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of the repeater. This is W2.